This is Fantasy Football Friday with Ty Richardson.
Welcome into Fantasy Football Friday, another edition. I'm your host, Ty Richardson. Please be joined by Benny Riccardi, Elite Fantasy HQ, EliteSportsBetting.com analyst, also co-host of The Opening Line. Benny, thanks for taking some time out of your day to join us, man. We appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. Always got to talk a little bit of football.
O.J. Howard, before the season began, I thought about drafting him. Here's a guy at Alabama that came up big in big-time games, but really hasn't gotten his NFL career projections to where many thought he would at the Buccaneers organization. Why do you think he hasn't flourished in Tampa Bay yet, Benny?
You know, he's had a lot of things, a lot of obstacles that have been in his way since he's been drafted. I mean, for a little bit of the time, him and Cameron Brate were kind of splitting snaps, so that obviously is going to limit whatever upside that he had there. You know, this year they're under a new system completely, and it's one that's normally more wide receiver heavy and doesn't really feature the tight end all that much. I got to be honest. I mean, O.J. Howard was the guy that at the beginning of the season I was expecting to be a lot better than we've seen out of him so far. I mean, most people argue that the best catch he's made all year was at the Tampa Bay Rays game the other night.
Gardner Minshew. This is a guy at Washington State that broke all type of records under Mike Leach, transferred. The best recruiting story I've ever heard was when Leach was pitching to him. He's debating to go to like Alabama, Washington State, I think another school. He's like, do you want to go there and be a backup or do you want to break all these records? And that sold him on going to Pullman, Washington and playing for Mike Leach out there in the Northwest. Minshew comes in for an injured Nick Foles, who's got the collarbone situation, out for 2 months. Do you believe that his magic of sorts is going to last the rest of the way? And I'm talking about fantasy-wise.
Yeah, I mean, see, the thing about Gardner Minshew, he doesn't have a huge ceiling, right? Like, he's not the guy that's going to wind up as the QB1 on most weeks, or even the QB top five on most weeks. But basically, every week, he's going out there, throwing for over 200 yards, getting 2 touchdowns. You know, people still look at the Jacksonville Jaguars as a run-heavy team, and they are pretty run-heavy. I mean, Fournette has been getting a massive amount of touches for that team right now. But they have some good wide receivers out there on the outside. I mean, DJ Chark has scored in every week but one so far this year. Is actually like a top 5 wide receiver in all of fantasy right now at the moment. I think that Jacksonville is pretty solid. I think Gardner Minshew is a really good young quarterback. And a lot of people were high on the Jacksonville passing game coming into this year. I mean, Nick Foles was a very trendy, you know, second quarterback that people were picking late in drafts, and you know, guys like D.D. Westbrook and DJ Chark, even Chris Connolly were guys that people started taking flyers on in, you know, preseason NFL drafts. And you know, a lot of times these guys have been on a lot of daily fantasy rosters as well. So Jacksonville is legit. I actually like them this week to beat New Orleans as well. They're 1-point favorites, so Vegas is agreeing with me at the moment.
Wow. You mentioned DJ Chark, and he really, it seems like, has formed a connection with Gardner Minshew. I had an opportunity to draft him earlier this year. I passed on him. Benny, is there a guy that you look back in your drafts, whether it's late in rounds or early in rounds, that you didn't draft, that you're just kicking yourself for with now in the fact that they probably had a good season up to this point?
Yeah, there's 2 guys, really, that I'm kicking myself because I don't have enough exposure to that I probably should have. One of them is Cooper Kupp. And Cooper Kupp was about a third, fourth round pick in a lot of drafts, depending on, you know, how many teams were in the drafts that you were in, 12 or 15. But everybody was trying to decide which one of the Rams wide receivers they really wanted. And I kind of went with the fact that, you know, I can't decide which one of these guys I want. You know, do you want the guy who gets the big plays in Cook? Do you want the guy who was seeing the most targets last year in Robert Wood? Or do you want the guy that, you know, had the most touchdown equity and was seeing the most the looks before he got hurt in Kupp. And I just decided to kind of stay away from it. And Kupp was my favorite of the three, so I probably should have just went ahead and taken him around there when everybody else was, but I was worried that, you know, maybe it went the other way. With them not using Gurley as heavily this year, Cooper Kupp has just seen massive amounts of targets. I think that the least amount he's had in a game so far is 9. And you look at the last couple of games, it's actually been trending upward. I mean, he had 12, and then he had 15, and then he had 17 in the last game. Mm-hmm. You know, Cooper Kupp is a guy I wish I had more exposure to this year, and I don't. And then the other one is Chris Godwin. I could not get myself to spend a second round pick on Chris Godwin when everybody was also spending a second or third round pick on Mike Evans. I just didn't think both of these guys could coexist. Not coexist, but like both of them could go off and pay off a second round kind of price tag.
Yeah.
And I was kind of right. But the problem is I thought Mike Evans would be the guy that paid it off, and Godwin was the guy that was overrated. So far, Godwin's the number one wide receiver in fantasy football this year.
I played Mike Evans the week he had, I think, the 3-touchdown performance, and I just got through playing Will Fuller this week, who had, I believe, 3 or 4 touchdowns. So I've gotten the brashness of some of these outbreaks amongst the wide receivers. Are you liking your team so far that you've drafted this year, or do you feel like it's time to turn the tables and make some trades on them?
Well, there's, you know, again, I'm in a lot of leagues. Mm-hmm. This is kind of what I do for a living. So I have a ton of them going out there. You know, a lot of the leagues that I do are best ball leagues, which is great for somebody who plays a lot of daily fantasy like myself. But basically, when it comes time to, you know, the last half hour or so when you're making roster adjustments, I'm usually more worried about my daily rosters than my season-long ones. But I'll say this. Every year, you're going to have some guys you hit on. You're going to have some guys that you miss on. You know, I was big on Geronimo Allison this year. I have him on a lot of my teams. So far, to me, that's kind of been a miss. I was also very big on Chris Carson, though, a guy who I was getting as a running back in the 4th round that I felt people were just kind of ignoring. Everybody was worried about, well, is he going to be the main guy? Is he not going to be the guy? Is he going to split carries? How that's going to work out? I was just collecting as much of Chris Carson as I could. So far this year, that's been great for me. And I think this is going to be another really, really good week for Chris Carson. I mean, if you watch what San Francisco was able to do to that Cleveland team last week, they just kind of ran all over them. And I think running on Cleveland is the path of least resistance. So Chris Carson's a guy that I'm very happy with the amount of exposure I have to in all these leagues. And I think I'm going to be even more happy about it after this weekend.
This is Fantasy Football Friday. I'm your host, Ty Richardson, joined by Benny Riccardi, who's an analyst for Elite Fantasy HQ. Benny, when you do bets, when you do different fantasy, I have some guys that don't play fantasy that bet on games weekly, not contained to certain players. And then I have some friends that do daily fantasy. They bet on their fantasy football league and a bunch of other things. Are you a guy that just bets daily fantasy and fantasy football, or do you also get into other games and just money lines and stuff like that as well?
Oh, yeah, I'm in on it on both sides. I mean, you know, what I like to tell people, when people ask me what I do, I basically tell them I do predictive analytics for sports. And that is basically what we're doing. We're trying to project what these guys are going to do. We're also trying to project out what these teams are going to do. So to me, sports betting, especially as somebody who lives in New Jersey, you know, we were one of the first ones to get the sports betting legalized outside of, Las Vegas. So for the last 2 years or so, you know, we've kind of been betting every day on a lot of this stuff and using a lot of the same, you know, algorithms and numbers that we put together to use for our fantasy teams, using that same stuff to go out there and bet as well. So I think, I mean, it's all good. If you're going to be sitting there, you're going to be putting in the time to do the research, and you're going to be putting in the time watching all these games and figuring everything out and following all these injury reports and making sure you know what's going on there. You want to try to capitalize on your opinions as much as you can. So I definitely play both sides of the coin, and honestly, I love it.
How long before do you see each state individually allowing sports gambling? Because I know it's a federal theme, but it's not individually allowed for every state as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be different based on, you know, who's the power. And also, like, in the state of New Jersey, one of the reasons they move so fast on it is, you know, we're a state that basically needed money. So
yeah.
I think it's like a lot of other things. It's going to roll out slowly. But once these other states see, this state is offering gambling and they're brought in. I mean, right now, I think in New Jersey, they're doing, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars a month in handle. And I think it's probably even more now during football season. I mean, those are the numbers we saw from baseball. I haven't seen the numbers yet for September, but I'm assuming the numbers were even bigger with football being a sport a lot more people bet on. Once these legislators see the money coming in, they all want more money for whatever projects they're trying to do or whatever they're trying to pull off in their state. So I think it's just a matter of time. You know, some states it's going to take a little longer than others, but eventually you guys are all going to get there.
For Arkansas, it started in July, and some casinos that are being built around here and then some that are already ready are just slowly progressing into that side of things. But I'm curious to see the other states, not only just in the South, but everywhere across the United States, how long it takes them to get in that, because that's where we're headed, man. How much do you think the government and really taxpayers and everything, and not taxpayers, but the taxes that are brought in off that inside the state, how much do you think that impacted the state of New Jersey?
Oh, 100%. That's the reason why they did it. I mean, they even basically said it from the beginning. You know, they knew this was going on. And I mean, even in other states right now, there are ways that you can sports bet. Yeah. I'm not going to say go do it. It's all illegal. It's not exactly on the up and up. But you got to know that there are people doing this all over the place. So why not make it, you know, something that is regulated and that you can keep an eye on it and you can make sure that people aren't getting their legs broken if they're not paying somebody or getting themselves into, you know, big debt because they can't afford the, you know, size of the bets that they're on. There's a lot of things that come along with a legalized sports betting market that make it a lot easier. Because let's face it, a lot of us were already betting in one way or another. But now you know that you're going to get paid. You don't have to worry about some offshore book not paying you out or anything like that. You know, it's a lot more on the up and up right now. And the fact that it is, you know, like I said, it's generating a lot of income in my state at the moment. And I think that's what a lot of other states have looked at and said, hey, we got to get on board with this too. Because the people in our state are already doing it. So we might as well get a little bit of a cut.
Benny, one of the questions, one of the cons, one of the drawbacks people always have when it comes to gambling, does it compromise the integrity of the game? From a guy that's done it a while, from a guy that's watches sports gambling, do you think when it reaches college sports, and I'm talking like goes up a lot more in college sports when states across the United States, really everyone starts doing this, do you think it's going to impact the college game as much as it has the NFL and other pro sports?
See, I think the argument that people make about pro sports fails to take into account the amount of money you would have to bet on some of these games in order for something like that to happen. You know, this isn't the 1920s anymore where, you know, the guys that were playing out there on the, you know, the whole Black Sox scandal in baseball with Arnold Rothstein and all that. It's not where you can pay these guys $10,000 and that's more money than they're making playing a sport. These guys aren't going to throw a game for $10,000 or have bad tape on themselves because they're not trying hard for $10,000 when their contracts are $3 and $4 million a year. That's, you know, so it's in the NFL and the NBA and Major League Baseball, I think it's overblown that people are concerned about this. But the thing you brought up that is something to be concerned about is in college, because again, these kids aren't getting paid, and whatever side of that whole argument you fall on, I'm not going to get into that right now, but It would be a lot easier and a lot more tempting where you could offer somebody $10,000 as a college athlete and you could actually bet enough money to, you know, make a profit on knowing that somebody is throwing the game. So it is something that's, you know, a lot more of a worry and my concern. And I actually wasn't that upset when some of these states were talking about not allowing, you know, betting on college sports. I really don't think it's a horrible thing to do. If you want the sports betting market long-term to be able to function and to be something that everybody can rely on and know that everything's on the up and up, you're going to have to make some sacrifices. So, again, I like betting on college sports as much as anybody else, but if you live in one of those states that says you can't, you should be happy that you're still at least getting professional sports and something along the line. And, you know, you never know how that whole thing is going to work out down the line.
We're speaking with Benny Riccardi at BennyR11 on Twitter. So, Benny, if you were a czar of sports gambling, if you headed up the whole stinking thing, it sounds like to me that you wouldn't allow gambling when it comes to college sports, or would you just be kind of on the fence about it?
Well, again, I would like to see it happen. But to me, it's not a fight worth having. So if there's a state that was worried about something like that happening, I would be perfectly fine saying, you know what, that's okay. Sooner or later, I think it'll come into, you know, being, but I wouldn't fight for it right away. I think the thing that I would want to do right away is just fight for everybody to be able to bet on professional sports. Because I think one of the problems that a lot of these states that haven't already jumped on board and put it in, you know, have, is that they don't really understand it. They don't really know what's going into it. They just think it's a bunch of people throwing money around and, you know, just a way for people to go broke and all that. You know, if you have an idea of what it looks like, it's a lot easier to expand it than to just try to get everything thrown in there right away. So I think incrementally it will get to that point, but if you have to start small and then work your way out, I think that's probably the best way for a lot of these operators to go about doing it.
Benny, as a Jersey guy, do you pull for the Jets or you pull for the Giants, or is another team that you're a big fan of when it comes to the NFL?
Yeah, I'm a diehard New York Jets fan. I grew up, still live right now about 5 minutes away from the Meadowlands, so
okay.
Or MetLife Stadium, as they call it now. It was the Meadowlands growing up for me, so that's still the way I call it.
So, please tell me, as a Jets fan, you've seen Big Daddy, right? I feel like every Jets fan has to see that Moody with little Cole and Dylan Sprouse and Adam Sandler talking about the GD Jets all the time. That's just an iconic classic. So that always cracks me up when KFC over Barstool always gets mad. And he just like he falls for it every single year. And I guess looking at what you have with Sam Darnold, a young running back in Le'Veon, or not really necessarily young, but a talented running back in Le'Veon Bell. Are you hopeful for the future, man, or is it still kind of bleak looking when you just have what seems like an eternal misery for Jets fans?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm almost 40 years old at this point, so I've been a Jets fan for a very long time. Optimism is not something that runs in our blood, you know. So we're always gonna be a little skeptical until they go out there and try to do it. And this year is just another example of that. I mean, you know, you look at the team right now. The offensive line can't block anybody. I know they had their third string quarterback in there, so you don't want to get too crazy about it. But it would be nice to see Sam Darnold get back this week. But again, the guy's been out for a couple of weeks. He's been sick. He's at mono. You don't know how well he's going to play here tonight. I got to be honest. One of my favorite bets this weekend, I am all over the Eagles giving the Jets 7.5. I think that is not even remotely close to what it should be. So I think that's one of the best bets of the week. So make sure you get your money down against my New York Jets. And I'm sorry, get Dallas. I think Dallas is going to just absolutely crush New York Jets this week. Basically, I think anybody going up against the Jets is going to crush them. So definitely make sure you get your money down against New York Jets. It's been paying off all season long, and I don't see any reason why it's going to stop.
So, Benny, I was talking to one of my buddies, Joe, about this. He lives in Wisconsin. He's a diehard Green Bay Packers fan. He also works in the fantasy industry. He knows that he has to shy away from his fandom when it comes to picking players, making bets, and whatnot. I'm curious how that impacts you. Obviously, the Jets are your team. You talked about how you've been a fan for 40-something years. This is a franchise that doesn't necessarily have the best of history when it comes to their football team. But when you're a diehard and when you love a football team, sometimes you don't have the right mindset when it comes to picking players, fantasy, and whatever. How do you balance being a big-time Jets fan and then also working in this industry?
Well, again, a lot of my approach comes down to our numbers and the numbers that we plug in and look at every week. And what we try to do is we try to get a projection of how we think the game is going to come out. And then once you have that projection, whether it's sports betting or whether it's fantasy, we want to take that, you know, idea of how we think the game is going to go and use it based on the prices in daily fantasy or based on the, you know, the odds that we're being offered by the, you know, the sports betting companies out there in the market. So I kind of take the emotion out of it. There's a lot of times where I'll bet on teams that, you know, I hate, or I'll bet against teams that I like just because that's where the numbers are and that's where the value is. And if you're going to be successful doing this long term, that's really the way you got to look at it. Now, every week I'm still going to sit in front of the television and agonizingly watch every single play of a Jet game. But a lot of those times I have had money against it, which this season has been a good thing because while I'm suffering through that misery, at least I know that my bankroll is getting fatter.
Talking with Benny Riccardi. He is an elite sportsbetting.com analyst, also co-host of The Opening Line. McCaffrey's been unbelievable this year. And there's always been this stigma that white running backs can't make it in the NFL anymore. Is he breaking that, or is he just a once-in-a-generational talent that's going to come on every, like, once 20, 30 years?
Can the answer to this question be both? Because I do think he's breaking the mold, but I also think he's a generational talent. I mean, this guy right now is putting up the kind of fantasy year that, I mean, I've been playing fantasy sports for almost 20 years at this point. I can only count a handful of other times we've ever had guys doing what he's doing right now. I mean, he's putting up massive yardage totals every game. He's getting into the end zone every game. He's honestly putting up numbers that if you didn't even count his catches and the yards he had receiving, would be running back one kind of numbers. If he wasn't even getting any carries and you were just talking about the catches and the yards and the touchdowns he has there, he would obviously be one of the better wide receivers on a weekly basis as well.
Yep.
And that's what makes this guy so great in fantasy. Like, if you took him in the first round, you basically got a combination running back and wide receiver one. You got both of those on the team. He's had games now where he's touched the ball 25 times and, you know, 15, 16 rushes and 8 to 10 catches out there and, you know, putting up over 200 yards in some of these games. Like, you know, a couple of years ago, I remember when David Johnson and Le'Veon Bell were kind of going back and forth. And if you were in any of these big-time, high-stakes fantasy leagues, if you wanted a chance to win an overall championship, you had to have one of those two guys on your team because they were doing the same thing. They were making 8 to 10 catches a game. They were, you know, 200, 150, 200 all-purpose yards like it was nothing. You know, putting up rushing touchdowns or receiving touchdowns. The guy is playing almost every snap. I think I saw a stat the other day where there's only like 10 snaps this year, or less than 10 snaps this year. Well, he wasn't out there on the football field and they had the ball on offense. I can't say enough good things about Christian McCaffrey. The first thing you said, though, is a little bit of a concern. You know, how long can this guy hold up taking the beating and taking this big of a workload that he's getting from his team? We already see it this week where he's listed as questionable. Mm-hmm. I did see this morning, though, that they basically said there's no way he's not playing. So if you still have him, I mean, it's not even a question. You just fire this guy up every week and put him in your lineup.
Benny, you remember that play where Cam Newton's at quarterback and Clay Matthews said, they're running this, they're running that, and he goes, well, you've been watching film when I watch this, and then Christian McCaffrey just proceeds to break his ankles and score that touchdown. Did that play ring a bell by chance?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And that's, I mean, listen, the guy is amazing. He's tough to tackle. He's got great hands. If you were going to go ahead and build the perfect running back in the lab, it would come out looking something like Christian McCaffrey right now.
There used to be an idea out there, and it's been debunked over and over and over again, that the African-American guy, he can't play quarterback, that blah, 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 blah. Just asinine comments. And if you look at the fantasy stats right now, man, Mahomes, Wilson, Dak, Lamar, and Watson. Five black quarterbacks. Top five in fantasy right now. And, I mean, you had Bill Polian for ESPN say that Lamar Jackson should be a wide receiver. That idea out there, similar to what Christian McCaffrey is doing, it's just dead, right?
Yeah, I mean, at this point, it definitely is. Especially if you're a fantasy football player. Because one of the things that I think is the most underrated thing that people aren't looking at when they're drafting quarterbacks for fantasy is what the guy can do with his legs. You know, if you get a guy that can add some of those rushing yards to you, those rushing yards are more valuable than the passing yards in the fantasy scoring format of just about every league I've ever seen and all the leagues that I've played. So you mentioned the guys that are all in the top five or six of the you know, the league right now for fantasy points scored. Mm-hmm. And these are all guys that can move their legs at this point. I mean, you go back to that 2017 draft. Here's a good question for you for anybody who said, you know, what you were saying. The number two quarterback, the number two pick in that draft was Mitch Trubisky.
Ugh.
The number 10 pick in that draft was Pat Mahomes. The number 12 pick in that draft was Deshaun Watson. You think the Chicago Bears might want to redo on that one?
Oh, my gosh. I have a couple buddies who are die-hard Bears fans, Benny, and they bring up that draft over and over again. And I think a lot more people were hopeful for Trubisky to take that next step this year, and he's been anything but that. Mm-hmm. But, man, that has got to be painful as a Bears fan that you pass on both the league MVP and Patrick Mahomes and then one of the brightest young players in the league and Deshaun Watson. I don't know if it gets worse than that, man.
Well, you know what does get worse than that? They actually traded up. San Francisco had that number two pick and yeah. Chicago had the number three pick. And they actually swapped picks. So not only did you make the mistake of picking Mitch Trubisky, but you actually had to give up, I think, a second or a third round draft pick for it as well just to get the opportunity to do that. So it does get worse. Sorry, Bears fan.
Here in Arkansas, man, I don't know how much you pay attention to college sports since you're up in Jersey. Do you follow college football much, Benny?
I watch a little bit of it, but I got to be honest, I'm more of an NFL guy for the exact reason you said. I mean, you look at the teams up in the area, the New York, New Jersey area,
mm-hmm.
you know, Syracuse, Rutgers, not anything that great, not teams that are competing for national championships on a yearly basis, you know?
Yeah, no, I hear you, man. So College Game Day went to Times Square a few years back, and it was a big deal because obviously where you're like kind of where you're living, that whole area, New York, New Jersey, just kind of northeast, it's not a ton there, but they did it. People seem to like it. But you are a guy that follows the NFL. When you're comparing college sports and NFL sports, do you think you're a bigger pro sports fan because of where you are located and where you grew up, or do you think it's because you actually like them better?
I think it's a combination of the two. I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I grew up 5 minutes away from the Meadowlands, so I've been going to Jets and Giants games my entire life.
Mm-hmm.
So NFL Sundays have always been bigger than college football Saturdays, you know, at least for me and in my family and all that. You know, there are other, you know, like, again, when you look at professional sports versus college sports, you know, I grew up playing basketball. I much rather watch college basketball than NBA basketball. Nowadays, it's probably a little bit closer because I think the NBA game has gotten a little bit better, and I think the college game has actually taken a step back from where it was when I grew up in the 90s. But I would have no problem watching college sports versus NBA. It's a very different thing, though. Like, when you're watching the NBA, you're watching it because there are certain players that you like, or because you're looking at it as, you know, this is the height, the most, you know, the height of what basketball could be. The most athletic guys, the most talented guys out there kind of doing their thing. The thing I always loved about college basketball, though, is, you know, in college, the kids care more. You're playing for the name on the front of the jersey instead of the name on the back of the jersey. And, you know, that's more of, you know, the sports that a lot of people grew up with, playing high school basketball or high school football or whatever. You know, you're playing with your friends. You're playing for the name on the front of the jersey. You're playing for your school. When you get to the NBA, you're playing for a paycheck. So it's a lot different than, you know, the love that a lot of these kids show in the college game. So that's the big difference to me. So, again, I'm not anti-college sports. I've just grown up watching a lot more professional football than college football. And as somebody who's, you know, a gambler and plays a lot of fantasy, I want to put my money where I know the most and I feel like I have the biggest advantage. And for me, that's just the professional, you know, professional football over college.
And I've always wondered, Benny, how much, again, we go back to your location growing up 5 minutes from the Meadowlands impacts us growing up. And I think it, in terms of our sports fandom, and I think it's a tremendous amount because, man, I was born and raised in Little Rock, Arkansas. It's a top 10 college football market. Every big time game, it seems like, Fayetteville, where the University of Arkansas is, SEC school, it's about 2.5, 2:45 away. That was the only place I was going to school. If I grew up kind of where you were, just in a different part of the United States, how much my fandom in terms of how much I love college football and basketball, would that be flipped? I think it would, based on what you've said, based on what I've talked to other people, but that's just something I've kind of pondered over the years.
Yeah, well, I mean, even, you know, even when you're growing up, with your friends and stuff, you know, you go out there, you throw the football around, you know, we were always, you know, this wide receiver from the Jets or that wide receiver from the Giants, you know, whereas a lot of times if you were growing up in your area, you were probably talking about the guys from the Arkansas team because that was the local team that everybody liked and everybody was kind of following and everybody knew all the players for. So I definitely think where you grow up has something to do with your fandom. I mean, we make fun of the guys who grew up in the New York City area that are Dallas Cowboys fans all the time. We're like, hey, you know, how do you grow up by Giants Stadium and move to the Cowboys? What's wrong with
a fair weather and bandwagon fan. That's how it happens, Benny. They're frauds. That's all they are. They're frauds, man. And I got friends around here, the USC fan, and like big time, like Yankees fan, stuff like that, where it's like you have no connection at all. Like, it'd be one thing if your parents were from there, grandparents were from there, or there's some connection. But when you just grow up a fan because of the team being good, that's just being a fraud, right?
Yeah, you know what? And you always know because those people, when that team's no longer good 5 or 6 years from now, they no longer talk about how they're a huge fan of them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, exactly right. Benny Riccardi at BennyR11 on Twitter. He is an analyst for Elite Fantasy HQ, EliteSportsBetting.com. If you want to hear more from Benny, you can find him on these platforms that I just talked about. Benny, thanks for taking some time again, man. We really appreciate it. Thanks for joining Fantasy Football Friday.
Anytime, man. You guys just let me know.
For show. For show. I'm getting that for show.
New fantasy football interviews every Friday on HitThatLine.com.